Welcome to Diary 101 Podcast. I am your host, Akaka Dewakandeke, also known as Aka. Well, it's a lovely morning. I love to record in the morning. And we're having an amazing guest back. I think that I always try to kind of learn how other people have created a very dynamic career for themselves, and I really just can't wait to kind of just dive into that and see what we can all learn, because I feel like from the previous episode I learned a lot. I took notes down. So I'm really excited to have her back and just look at a different side of her life and just be very intrigued about it that I am. With that being said, welcome Siveso. Hi Siveso.
Hi Aka, hello everybody. It's good to be back and I'm glad to be a guest on the show.
Yeah, welcome back. So when you look back on your life, did you ever picture the career you have right now?
Oh, that's an interesting question. No, actually. Growing up, I had always wanted to be a pediatrician. I have a thing for kids. I really like children. And I've found myself, you know, from a younger age, even now as I'm older, gravitating towards kids. So I always thought I'd be a pediatrician. And my mom's a midwife, a nurse. So I thought, I'm likely going to take this path. And then getting into secondary, I've always been a brilliant kid, right? But getting into secondary, I did not like the sciences and I went to a technical school. So I did not like pure science, you know, chemistry, what's that? Physics, biology, I hated them to the core. And that's when I knew that I was not going to take on medicine. So the next best thing at the time was economics. So I ended up studying economics out of the country. And then for my master's is when, you know, I was studying at the time of the technology revolution, which was just starting. And I then fell in love with technology and then I went to study fintech. So that's how I find myself in technology. But what's funny is even now I'm not even practicing technology. I'm working in, you know, treasury and global markets, which is a different branch of banking. So really not a straight line in terms of my career, but here I am and I'm doing what I'm doing. Yeah.
I think you sound like any child. When you talk about how you gravitated towards children and you thought you'd be a pediatrician. I think I have the same story. Initially, I was just really not such a brilliant kid. So really also sciences were no-go area, but I was such a people pleaser and I liked my grandfather so much and he was so ill for like 4 years. So because of that thing where you're like giving him medication, taking care of him, he was like, you're going to be my doctor. So I decided I was going to study medicine because my grandpa really thought it would be great to tell his friends that I'm a doctor. But then he died and I said, hey guys, I'll pass. Which is a disappointment to my grandma because she's a nurse. So she's like, I really wanted you to be a doctor. And I'm like, me too. But the other grandkids can be doctors for the rest of us. So yeah, I think I like your story. It reminds me of my grandparents.
That's good. That's lovely. Thank you.
So when we talk about you being in the financial sector and deciding to study economics, like when you were deciding, was it like, again, I have a very interesting story when it comes to how I decided to study accounting and finance. Like, did you have it all figured out when you were studying it? Did you picture your life in a certain way? Or you were just like, I'm going to study this and hope for the best. Like, what was the plan with your career when you decided not to go for medicine and study economics?
Yes and no. So I think, like every young person, you somewhat, not every young person actually, like most young people, you gravitate towards what's available at the time. And I think when I just completed high school around 2012, it's going to reveal my age, which is fine, really. I am very proud of my age. The Copperbelt University had just introduced the Bachelor of Science in Economics. And I remember vividly, well, I've always been a clear, you know, like directed kid. I did not want to study at UNSA. And UNSA was offering, I think, an MA or a BA or something. And they wanted me to then do that gap year where you wait until the next year to study in Zambia. So I knew for facts that I didn't want to do that gap year. And I had always known that I didn't want to study in Zambia at all. So when the opportunity to study abroad came, it came in to study a Bachelor of Science in Economics in India. And it had courses like, are we good?
I lost had, you.
I think I lost you for a minute there.
I lost you too. you're talking about, you do want to take the opportunity. You took the opportunity because you do want to take a gap year.
Okay. So I didn't want to take the gap year in Zambia. So I then, you know, my parents, I was like, I don't want to study in Zambia. And then I don't remember how the opportunity came about, but then an opportunity came to study in India. And I took it. I thought, why not? It's the capital. It's a different country. I'm going to learn with different people. I'm going to take it. And then when I looked at the courses, I vividly remember I was sold because there was, it was delving, the beauty about the course abroad was that it was delving into the specializations of economics. So at bachelor's, I studied things like health economics, agricultural economics, environmental economics. I studied the specializations of economics, and that for me was what sold me to go and study abroad. So you can kind of say, yes, I somewhat knew what I wanted, but I always thought, okay, I'll study economics and then I'm going to go and specialize in health economics. It's going to be a bit closer to health, even though I won't be a doctor, and then I'm going to figure it out. But when I finished uni, I remember I was graduating like the first week of June, and the second week of June I was on a flight back because I then had to interview for an internship in a bank. And so I wasn't that girl or that student who, like, you finish uni and then you chew a bit, you play a bit. No, I finished this week, and next week I was back in Zambia straight into an interview. And that's how I got into Standard Chartered Bank. My first job as an intern in wealth management, I was hired by Stanley Tamele. He's still my mentor in the financial market space up to now. And yeah, he's now, I think, at Absa Bank. And so that's how I got into banking as an economist. Zero experience, zero nothing, zero knowledge. Somebody just took a chance and shot at me and said, okay, yeah, we're looking for an intern for 3 months. Let's get her. And that's how I got in. So that's how I pivoted from medicine, wanting to study medicine, to studying economics and then getting into banking. Mm-hmm.
That sounds interesting, kind of. And one thing I'm getting from this conversation, and I've got talking to you, is I think you're one of the people that, even from a young age, you've been sure about yourself. Not that you've had everything figured out, but you've always had like a little bits of certain things sure. And again, you're such a go-getter. Because when you're saying, I took a gap year, I played work after university, I took a gap year, I traveled again. So it's like, for you, listening to you is like, oh, you're one person that's such a go-getter and you're really always focused on something. So when you kind of think about your childhood in general, how do you think that personality came about?
Which personality?
The go-getter personality.
Okay.
Or it's you build. Okay, I also think it's something you build, but also maybe it's something that can come from your parents and environment you grew in. Oh, interesting. But yeah, what do you think?
Good question. I think a lot of scenarios. Yes, you are actually right. Your environment does play a very big part of who you become as a person. environment is your family, your home setup, the schools you go to, the people you surround yourself with, friends, family, they come into play in evolution, in growth, into the person we become. So I think at every stage of my life, that has always been a factor. But going back to my childhood, I'm grateful to God that I've been a kid or a person that's been blessed with somewhat some stellar brain capacity. So I've been an intelligent kid from baby class, from primary school. My former classmates would tell you that, you know, I was the kid. It was so funny. Like Parents' Day, my mom would come and I come from a family that's big on I don't say achievements, but on celebrating wins. So every Parents' Day or every prize giving day, my mom would come with like flowers, and she'd always be there. So grade one, grade two, prize giving day, the best in English, the best in whatever, geography, the best in. So I've been that kind of kid from primary school up into junior secondary school, you know, being a topping student. So I've had that support from childhood, from my home, from my parents, from my family. Being a reading kid, being a studying kid, I've always been a reader, a thinker, an explorer, is something that's been supported from home. So it's not foreign to me to want to do the best, to be ambitious. My mom would yell for, you know, failing. But then I've always been a 1, 2, 3 kind of kid. And, you know, some of the friends who remember this, who listen to this would laugh because we even used to exchange. If I'm not number one, then I'm number two, then somebody else is number one. Like you could predict who it would be, especially from a baby class or a primary into mid-secondary. So that has somewhat propelled me into who I am in terms of a solid foundation for success. So intelligence has always been there. Hard work has always been there because my mom, I come from a strict home. I'm going to say a strict parent because my mom has always been there. You don't fail in my house kind of person. So my siblings and I know that, and it's been testament of me. So I've carried that in everything I do. Like at some point in my adulthood, I struggled with failure because I don't know what failure looks like because I've always been pass. But then those are things that you now start to relearn and unlearn as an adult to say, hey, it's actually okay to fail. Not necessarily in your grades, but it's okay to fail at things and you just take the lessons. So yeah, a good home ground and a supported family are things that have propelled me into who I am or into being the ambitious go-getter kind of personality, if I can call it that. But even just as an adult, I've always been the daring child. So out of all my siblings, I'm the only one who went to boarding school. I'm a last born. So I've always been a daring outlier into being very curious about the world and trying new things. So even when I went into study, you know, science and economics, I wanted to do it because it was new. It wasn't, you know, that heard of. And I went in and did it. When I went in to do my master's, I remember interviewing it. And the interviewers are like, okay, you know, you'll be the first person in Zambia with this qualification. And at the time, that's 2021, studying for a master's in financial technology. At the time, again, very bold and daring in that, look, I've gone through different phases or, you know, steps in my life where I've had to apply myself and expand myself. So even getting into this will be a new thing, a foreign thing, but I'm here for it because I'm explorative, I'm curious, I'm ambitious, but also I've got the intellectual capacity to back it because I can comprehend things that may seem, you know, difficult. And yeah, so I guess that all of these things have formed into my very, you know, serious professional personality. But outside of that, those who know me will tell you that I'm in the middle between, you know, a serious personality and a fun one because I always balance these things. I can study, read, and then on the cross side, I'm a very chill, fun, you know, relaxed, leisure kind of person. So I guess the two balance it out, each other out in terms of personality. Mm-hmm.
Something I picked on is how sure you are of yourself. Again, I think I'm going to say this a lot, which is nice to see for a woman. Because I know traditionally, we're kind of taught to kind of bring ourselves down. So one thing I have for you is, you know, you're smart, right? Like, you know, you're smart and you go in the world knowing you're smart. What are some of the barriers you've experienced? The fact of just knowing that you're smart and expressing yourself like that? Or have you had to kind of be adaptive or flexible or tone yourself down in certain environments? Like, how has that picture been for you? Because I know a lot of women struggle with this, especially me.
That's a good question. And the key word you've used there is adaptability. I think it's very important to know when to play to your strengths and when not to. So I'll tell you that knowing that I'm intelligent, book smart, or brain capable is just one of the strengths that I have. But it doesn't mean that you just, you know, use it as a brag, or you use it even when it's not possible, when it's not necessary. So I'll give you an example. In uni, I found that especially those who've studied abroad will attest the fact that you find even smarter people than you. So at that point, your smart ability is questioned, or rather for me, it had to be now backed by actual study and actual information and depth, because you will find there's really fantastic, brilliant people on this earth. If you study in India, you do know that the Indian community or the Asian community are very smart, especially numbers smart. So in that particular moment, I could either shrink or I could make friends with them likes, so that I'll be able to glean off their knowledge and be able to grow and better myself, of which I did. If you studied in, you know, European countries, it's the same thing. That's even worse because the diversity is even bigger. So you'll find people who are intelligent in different ways. By the way, you can also be very street smart. Street intelligence is something that we don't talk about as well. So again, in there, instead of shrinking, I was very open to making friends of different diverse cultures, because even from that, instead of shrinking, you're actually just going to learn new and different perspectives, which add to your growth. But when I talk about it in the career office setup, it is true that, you know, most times I heard this from a conversation that a friend had. Women are over-mentored and under-sponsored. And in that particular phrase, I'll refer to it in that women can be so intelligent, super equipped, but to be able to land the opportunity sometimes is where it's difficult. And sometimes some women can land the opportunity, but because they're overshadowed by, you know, the imposter syndrome, or even in an environment where there's more men than female, the imposter syndrome want to kick in and you fail to somewhat deliver even when you know you can. So at that times your intelligence can be questioned. But even when I say sometimes play to your strengths and know when to play them, I'll give you an example of where you are the subordinate and you've got, you know, a boss, a line manager. Sometimes allow your line manager to take the light and take the glory, because either way, it's a trickle down effect on you in terms of your promotion or your growth. But also speak up when you need to speak up. Use your super ability, your capability of intelligence when it's necessary, in meetings, in reports, in presentations, in depth, in decks, where it's necessary. Don't shun out and be quiet and not speak or not contribute because, oh, the imposter syndrome will kick in, or, oh, I don't know if I should say this now. No, in those types of situations, you really have to show that, you know, you're just not a pretty face, but you've got intelligence to back it up, right? So I guess all of these scenarios play out differently. But most importantly, I think for most women, it's always about the imposter syndrome, or it's always about, you know, just not being confident enough to speak, to shine when you're given a platform to shine. So I think that's what I can say about it. But sometimes God-given intelligence is just that, you have it. So don't take for granted and don't underutilize it when you need to use it. I think that's the summary of what I can, you know, how I can answer that question in a sentence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I think recently my friends and I have been talking about how to navigate the corporate world, because we're all in that world. And I tend to think about stuff in a business perspective, but everything is always based on relationship. So I think the past few weeks or months, I am experiencing life dynamics differently, and I'm trying, how do I manage this in a certain way without stepping on anyone's toe? Like, how do I make sure my boss shines and do this and that?
Yeah,
I like this the perspective you're giving, because I think us who are getting into the corporate world or us that own businesses now have to learn how to kind of navigate that and also navigate it as a woman. Unfortunately, it's different for men and women. It's just accepting that from the beginning and learning how to navigate that. So yeah, so it makes a lot
you know
sense.
It's a very Sorry to cut you. It's a very interesting, you know, phenomenon. I've had a male mentor who said to me, sometimes, so the imposter syndrome is just in your head. It's not really a big deal that you have to focus on. Just focus on the fact that you have the strength, the skill, and you are equipped to execute the job. Don't focus on the fact that you're female. That also gave me an open mind to say, you know what, sometimes just focus on just that. You are hired for a job that you can do. You are equipped to do it. You have the capacity to do it. So do it. But when the gender and the sexes come in, because at some point they do, because yeah, you've mastered yourself well enough to know what you bring to the table, use that. Yeah, sometimes you can be in a meeting and you say something, and the next guy puts up his hand and he says the exact same thing, and everyone's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But you're like, but guys, I just said that. Well, happens to the best of us or the most of us. You're female, somebody else said it and they heard it. But it doesn't mean the next time you shun out because, oh, last time you did. No, you can always just use your grammar to reiterate a point. As I mentioned prior, before Jack further alluded to my contribution, A, B, C, D, E, and D, and you've made your point across. So I think the nuances will always be there, but it goes back to your self-awareness. You know you can do the job. You know you're equipped for the job. Don't put yourself in a position where your competency is questioned. That, I think, should always be clear. So even in a point where people question your capacity, just shine, just execute, just do what you were brought there to do. And the rest of what everybody else is saying is noise. Mm-hmm.
I think that's like a really good, that's good advice for somebody that's starting their career. I think in Zambia, it's more like 23, 24, like early career, right? I think as a girl, I think you need to hear that sometimes certain things are just in your head, which is true. But I would also like to mention that dynamics are different depending who your line manager is. Dynamics would be different if your line manager is female. Dynamics would be very different if your line manager is male. Not to say anything negative, but I think that from my experience, it's been very interesting to navigate the two. Because then, yeah, a lot goes on, is all I can say. So, yeah, I hope when girls hear this, they go like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. A little jam before they get into the corporate world. So let's fast forward to you coming back from India. Firstly, before we fast forward to that, what do you think is like the major difference between the education system in India and the education system in Zambia? I always like to know people's perspective that have studied abroad. Like, what do you think is like the major differences?
Okay, so I'm going to speak to it in three differences or even similarities, because I've had the opportunity to live in three different continents. So Zambia being Africa, India being Asia, and then the United Kingdom being Europe. So it's very interesting. I think when I left Zambia, I was still very young. Oh my gosh, I think I was 16. 16, yeah. So I was going into this big world, oh my gosh, with diverse people, with different people, a different continent altogether. And at that point, I'm just going to say what probably gave me a good footing was a solid foundation of values that I had from home. So I knew where I was coming from. I knew how I was brought up. So I wasn't necessarily excited. I was excited to see the world, but not in its negative form. So I was still a book person. I was still a reader. I still found a bit of a balance, you know, to have fun, but not necessarily to extremes that would endanger me. So I think my first degree, I was very much focused on, you know, I need to get the grades. I need to get this done, especially in year one, because I did a 3-year degree. And that's the difference. You know, in these other countries, you can do a bachelor's degree for 3 years. In Zambia, it's 4. So that was one difference. So year one was a lot of settling into this new world, making new friends, new people. By the time I got into year two and year three, it was so chill. It was not so easy. I found myself. So from that, away from the educational system, I would say just getting in as a fresher, what I was learning on day one would probably be what we do as A-levels here in Zambia, especially from a numbers perspective, ADMA. So already I know that even for me, for my kids, the foundation of education I'll give them is, I would want to give them, I hope in God's good, you know, mercy that I'll give them is one that would be acceptable to the world, the best that there is, be it the Cambridge or whatever it is, so that even when they step out into their world, in the world, they're already at that level and they don't have to struggle with being behind. Because your ordinary grade 12 person getting into an additional mathematics class of day one of uni would be a stretch. So they'll either shrink or they'll adapt. And all of that comes from the background that they have. So maybe just that on an education perspective. But yeah, getting into undergrad for me was a lot of foundational support that I had from home. So I already knew who I was, where I was coming from. And that gave me a good footing not to even, you know, move off path like some of my peers did. Because there's still a lot of my peers who didn't get to graduate, who lost themselves or their way at some point. And it happens to a lot of kids who study abroad because of the freedom, because of the independence. Some of them don't quite get back on their footing and they lose themselves. And that's just unfortunate. But then moving on to maybe talking about the Indian, curriculum. It's what I said when I said the Asian community is known to be very smart. So they prep, or their curriculum is like that from, you know, primary to secondary to uni. They really are like your creme de la cremes. So that gave me a foundation of learning with some of, you know, very intelligent people and mingling, especially from an academia side. And it gave me a good, solid footing. So even when I was studying for my master's degree, I didn't have to shrink myself or reinvent myself because I already had that foundation from undergrad. And then the difference now that comes into the British educational system, the beauty is from a Zambia's side, we already have that foundation, especially on the language part of English. So we speak well, so comprehension is not an issue. At that point now, it's just really you applying yourself, right? But then I was an older student, so, I knew so well how to balance my academics and fun, and it played out very well. But then I was an older student who had been a working, a working individual. So for me at that point, it became bigger than just the academics. It became now about growing my professional, you know, networks, my professional capabilities, getting into societies and fellowships, and just now mingling with seasoned executives or even my peers who are doing amazing things to grow the professional standpoint, adding to the academia. So maybe that's the difference that I would give. But also just in a nutshell, anybody who studied abroad would tell you that it's different from home. So I guess those are the strides that we're trying to do as a country to also better our education system. The exposure is different. The perspective is different. The networks are different. The leisure is different. You just, if you allow yourself and you're studying abroad, you really have a light bulb moment to so many things that exist. And it's really the true testament of the world is your oyster, because you come back a totally different person. So even the way I relate in life, you know, the way I relate to people, the way I see things in perspective is different because I've been exposed to other ways of life outside of Zambia compared to somebody who's just been in the country all their life. Yeah.
That's so true. I totally agree, because I have had the experience of going out and coming back. So I look at life differently. And the highlight is the education system is changing in Zambia. Our government, the curriculum is changing, actually. So I hear that we're going from 4 years to 3 years.
Absolutely.
A lot is changing. I'm very excited to kind of see what that's going to bring. And I think we'll only know the results in if we let this sit. I hope we let it sit and sink into the system. Yeah, we'll probably know the results in like 10 years more. I'm like a long-term
Absolutely.
Person.
And it's a good trajectory we're on. So, you know, it's only going to get better for the next generations coming, in that we're equally catching up with the world. So it's a very brilliant thing that we're seeing now in terms of an enhancement on our education system.
Yeah. And I'm so interested in the education system in Zambia, because like you said, it's very different from any other education system abroad. So, yeah, I look forward to see how that goes. So fast forward to you coming back, getting your first internship at Standard Chartered. I'm getting that right. I hope I'm getting that right.
Yes, correct.
How was that experience? They just took a chance on you and said, hey, you graduated a week ago. Here's an interview. Here's the job. How was the change settling into that, and also just a shift, the change of leaving India and coming back home and just going straight to work?
I was lucky, I think. I was very lucky to be, not everybody gets that kind of dimension, right? Where you come back and you're straight into an interview and a job. But like I said, I was given a chance by Mr. Tamele, somebody I really look up to and respect. And it was great. At the time, Standard Chartered was, they still are in wealth management business. So I got it. So I was leveraging off the back of what I had studied in economics. So a lot of that was around, you know, the economy, around fundamentals of banking, around fundamentals of finance and, you know, corporate finance specifically, and also fundamentals of investments, things around, you know, what are government securities, the basics of what the banking was at the time. So I was getting in with just the basics of knowing Excel and basics of knowing presentation. But then you get into the job and you find, oh my God, it's bigger than you. Now you have to deal with clients. You have to go out and meet clients and talk to clients. It's not just knowing what a government security is, but how it operates, how it works, and how, you know, people invest in them, how coupons are calculated, what do the yields mean. So it meant now getting into the deeper side of that. And I was very lucky to be joining a team that had experts. And I was the youngest in the team. So they took me on and they taught me a lot about what, you know, was a solid foundation for me in wealth management. And you can also tie that to financial global markets or treasury. So that was the transition. It wasn't so hard because, again, it's what I've said, studying abroad, you're already used to mingling with different kinds of people, older, younger, different personalities. So it was the same thing. I just transitioned now into a 9-to-5 job, which meant that I had to, you know, just get into that kind of direction and trajectory and learn. But also it's the same fundamentals of applying yourself, of, you know, being a team player, of asking as many questions. Curiosity has saved me. I'm still, even up to now, I'm a big learner. So I'm not afraid of asking the dumb question in the room. I will still ask it even now, as long as it gives me information, because I will use that information to my benefit. So all of those, you know, traits and working hard are things that kept me in the bank. So I ended up staying in Standard Chartered for what, 7 years in three different roles just after that internship. So yeah, that's what I can say about the transition.
I like how you kind of explaining everything. You're making me actually picture you transition and work in the different roles and how you have experienced people and the environment around you. When it was time, so before you went for your master's, was it before or after? Like, did you have to kind of transition to a different role or a different company before leaving for your master's? And also, what made you study fintech? I know it's
interesting.
Like you said, it was the beginning of an age, the financial age, the tech age, where we're now considering how technology affects finance.
Mm-hmm.
You just go from economics, which also makes sense, financial fintech. But how did you? I'm so curious on how you make your decisions sometimes. I know you're both an ambitious and a risk taker, but it's so I'm so curious with, like, really how your brain works. That's not like the best way I can put it, but yeah.
Interesting. Even I'm also curious about how my brain works. So fast forward. So I got in as an intern. I did 6 months of interning in wealth management. And then at the end of my contract, they couldn't renew my contract. I don't remember why. I think there was some restructuring going on. And then another opportunity at the time opened up. I then got to move as a business planning manager to the chief information officer at the time, Ms. Musondem Sakanya, a woman I absolutely respect and look up to even to today. And again, she took a chance on me, right? That role at that time, even now, it was a very senior role that, you know, seasoned people would be sitting in that kind of position. And when she was hiring, because I had just finished my internship and somebody had floated my name to say, oh, you're hiring, there's maybe somebody we can get internally, da, 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 da. And I remember my interview. I literally, oh my gosh, she's gonna laugh when she hears this. I was so stressed. I was so scared. Like, is she gonna like me? She was one of those, you know, really, how can I describe her? One of those really brilliant, disciplined leaders. Like, if you work with her or under her, you need to get your stuff together. So that was already the perception I had of her before interviewing. And I was like, oh my God, I don't think she's going to get me. And at that time, I was only 21 years old, right, coming in. And I remember interviewing with her, very informal. And her last phrase was, I like to give a chance to young people because sometimes they can surprise you pleasantly. And that's how I moved from an internship to an interview. And the following Monday, I'm starting a new job. And I remember at the time there was somebody else on the desk who was sitting in. So there was two of us and we kept working. And 6 months later, she had to make a decision on whom to hire. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't think they'll hire me, right? What do I know? I'm just 21. I'm just young. This other person has been in the job. I'm going to apply for another job. And behold, another job opened up at the time. So I remember doing my very best in that interview. It was wealth management operations associate at the time. So remember, I had interned in wealth management for 6 months. So I had that knowledge. So when they were hiring in that space, though it was back office support, I was able to speak in that interview because of the experience of the internship that I had. But this new job that I was now sitting on as business manager in information technology was something I had never done and I had no experience in. But guess what? As God should have it, I ended up having both offers. So I took on the gamble, and I remember speaking to somebody saying, wealth management, I know, I think this I can grow in, but information technology, I don't know. And it's a very senior role supporting, you know, an executive head. It means dealing with the executive members and the CEO and the region. I'm just 21. I don't know if I can do this. Da, 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 da. And they were like, yeah, that's the job you're going to do because that's where you're going to grow. And lo and behold, I took it. And that was the foundation of my career. I always say to her, Ms. Musakanye, that I wouldn't have my career today if I hadn't worked for her, because those 4 years are what gave me expansion. So I learned leadership from her. I learned networking from her. I learned managing people and emotional intelligence from her. And in working with her is where I got the exposure of fintech, because remember, I was working in technology. So now I was privy to information or, you know, meetings and conversations around digital banking, digital transformation, skills of the future, da, 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 da. And I was working for Standard Chartered. It's a global bank, right? What they do in London, Singapore, New York, they're replicating in Africa. So I had a first mover advantage in information. And that's why even when I chose to study fintech, it's because at that point I knew 10 years from now, this skill is going to be relevant. So I took the jump and I wanted to study for my master's at the time. So when the opportunity came to apply for Chevening, you know, I had the support of my line manager, Ms. Musakanye, and I applied for it. And I remember the first time I didn't get it. I think we talked about this last in the previous interview. But when I then did, all of the stars had aligned at that point, and that's why I took it. So I had the first mover's advantage. I had leverage of being in rooms where conversations around the digital transformation, the fintech revolution, around digital banking and payment systems, automations. I had information about what banking would be in the next 5, 10, 15 years. And so I opted to take that jump so that in the future, I can always have leverage of having a skill that is relevant. It will always be relevant. You can ask me now and say, oh, but you work in treasury markets. Guess what? It's still very relevant because we're seeing automation of investment systems, investment solutions now. We're seeing quantitative trading in that now people use programming languages. I'm a programmer. Programming languages like, you know, around Python and SQL. You use machine learning now in the advanced, you know, countries in trading of securities. So there are two parallel courses, but they're also intertwined because of foresight. I saw that in the future, at some point, these things are going to merge. Am I practicing them now in Zambia? No, but I will always have the leverage of having that qualification, of having that paper in the future. If I ever decide to work outside Zambia, or if international organizations come to Zambia and they're looking, I will always stand out because I have that qualification and I have that paper. So in short, taking that leap or that jump to someone take, you know, study fintech when not everybody was doing it. Of course, now it's a hot topic. Everybody's talking fintech. You know, everybody wants to be associated with anything that's fintech, that's AI, that's robotics. The beauty for me is I will always have a qualification and an academic understanding of what, you know, that particular fraternity relates to. So you put me anywhere and I will shine because I understand it. And what that has just done for me is it's made me skill ready for the future. So I always say to young people, you need to be able to suss out what the jobs of the future are. There'll be very few jobs that allow us to just sit in the office, you know, because everything is getting automated now. When you delve into the world of robotics, we're seeing a lot of robots being programmed to do, you know, stuff that human beings used to do. Again, it doesn't mean that human beings will not be relevant. They will be, because you need a human brain to be able to decipher what a robot can do. So even in AI, you feed the AI information that it generates. It still needs human capacity. It still needs human intervention. But the people who will thrive at that time will be people who understand the programming languages, will be people who can code the programming languages, will be people who can interpret or sell whatever automation or fintech system is in place. So that's a little bit of a nutshell. I know I've overspoken, but yeah, over to you.
No, I like what you've spoken on, and we have a few stuff to pick on. So one thing I have noticed about you is there's this theory about children, the child theory, where the firstborn is the one that is takes up a responsibility, not a risk taker, will always look for the safe, secure job to kind of lean in and help the family, and forgotten what the secondborn does. But the last born is always one that is most likely anyway to be a risk taker, because everybody who was born, people would laugh and say that the parents are tired of parenting, so they kind of leave the last born to do their own thing. So like that's for one theory that I picked up when you're speaking, and it's very interesting. Again, I think I've said that a lot. When I listen to you speak, I really do picture what you're saying, but how strategic you are as a person and how differently you look at the world. So I've forgotten what my other theory was, but I think I remember it. But yeah, so it's very interesting to kind of see that play out in this interview and the previous one. And I hope everybody sees that. So that's like one thing. And the second thing I wanted to mention is, what do you think are this, I wouldn't say jobs for the future, but I'll trickle it down to saying, what are the skills for the future? Like, what skills should youth have for the future?
Very interesting. And thank you for that perspective. I wasn't always this strategic. I think I've been very blessed to be surrounded by a network of people who think a certain way and who go out into the world, you know, with a different lens. So maybe that has worked for me.
Yeah.
I've been very lucky to be exposed to, you know, mentors who've somewhat given me an advantage. I've been very lucky to be exposed to, conversations and circles that have forced me to see the world in a different lens. So maybe that I'll give kudos to. And those are the people who've made me, see the world in a different lens. I've had to grow up very quickly also because of the jobs I've taken and the circles I've found myself in. So some people get surprised when I say, oh, I only just turned 30 like 2 months ago. Like, really? You're very mature, you sound, yeah, because I've been forced to do that by virtue of the jobs I've taken or the people I hang around with. And that has formed a big part around my strategic lens that I view life with. And really and truly, everything is a strategy, guys. Surely you can't just be doing things just because. At some point, it should add to a greater, objective, right? But yeah, I haven't always been like this. It's taken intention, it's taken steps, it's taken risks. Not everybody quits their job to go and study. Others would never do it, but I did. So all of these things come into play. But now let's talk about jobs of the future. It's a very interesting one, especially now that we live in the technology evolution. But we're hearing a lot around AI, and how this is changing different cuts across, where we're seeing essential sectors like healthcare, like education, the financial sector, the climate sustainability sector. We're seeing how, technological advancements have made a change. And when I say that, I'm using specifically examples around AI and big data. So now we're seeing high demand of jobs or roles around data scientists, around AI specialists, AI engineers, cybersecurity, analysis, cloud solutions, fintech experts. That's specific to people who understand the language, people who understand the codes. So I'll give you an example. When I studied fintech, what were the technology core courses? I had to do programming for finance. I had to do machine learning. I had to do big data. I had to do fintech regulation. So those are the core. I had to do, I think, quantitative trading and also blockchain and cryptocurrency. Just those six fields I've spoken about are already predicting where you can see the financial sector being. So if you can find yourself in any of those, then you're already a step ahead at, you know, securing a job in the future. But what does that mean? If you can't study it at a bachelor's degree or at a master's or at a PhD, you can start to equip yourself with short courses around these specializations so that you have the knowledge. So AI, machine learning around coding, data science, cybersecurity, fintech. And fintech is not just the technical side that I've spoken, but it's also the administrative and business development side of it. You know, can you sell digital solutions? And this is the angle that you see your mobile money coming in, or you see your fintech startups around digital payments and lending coming in. So those are still opportunities that need to be you know, looked at. Outside of that, we're seeing jobs around you know, not your usual jobs, but around technological design and development. We're seeing, you know, in the West now, we're seeing people who develop, you know, video games and chat boxes. All of those things are also very important. Your blockchain developers, you know, your, I think I'm trying to remember what it's called. I think it's a UX or UI designer. Those are the ones who design. Your UX designers, those are the ones who design, you know, interfaces between the technical side and what we see in the front facing as a digital user. All of those are still jobs of the future, okay? There's a very famous world now that has been birthed, which is the IoT, the Internet of Things. So many associated, you know, systems will be birthed out of that around blockchain, around crypto. And those are still things that none of us have delved into to even understand. The world of robots, robotics in itself is, oh my God, it's absolutely brilliant. I've been studying, you know, I'm looking for courses because I want to further my education again. Oh my God, please don't clown me on that. I would really like to do a PhD in any of these things, right? And when I was reading up on a PhD on robotics from, I think, the University of, should have been Manchester or was it Oxford? And it was so technical. And I was saying to myself, do I even have the capacity to be engineering things and whatever? But the world is telling you where it's going. That if you don't understand these things, you might be out of a job. So again, it's not that the robots will take over the jobs. It's just a lot of things will be automated to make things faster, simpler, easier, to drive more efficiencies and reduce costs. But the people who will survive are people who will be able to tell the robot what to do, are people who will be able to work alongside a robot. So that's how we must start thinking in terms of where we're trying to see ourselves relevant. Away from that, now we're seeing a lot of noise around, you know, sustainability and green energy and green jobs. Even that also needs technology. Cobalt Metals here in Zambia is using AI to detect where the next metal, the next gold, the next emerald is going to be. All of that is AI in engineering. So even if you're in the construction and engineering space, that's what AI is doing, or that's what technology and robotics is doing. So renewable energy engineers, AI engineers and geologists and miners, sustainability, we're seeing a lot about green sustainability and green energy. Those two are jobs of the future. And then I won't do justice if I don't talk about health, the medical space. A lot of research now using technology is going into predicting, you know, medications and cures for a lot of diseases that exist, especially your chronic diseases. So now at University of Oxford, they have the IoT Center. And they've collaborated that with their health center where they're specifically using technology, even the University of Bristol as well. They're using technology to predict what cancer metastasis looks like. I have my own depth and understanding of cancer due to, you know, a personal encounter that I've had in my family. So, but that has forced me to also take an interest to say, okay, so what technology things are happening in the medical space? So now they're using technology to predict what is the next disease? How can we solution for this disease? How can technology come in to be able to provide a solution? When you bring it back to countries like Zambia, those are opportunities, because if you have the knowledge and you've got the expertise, that's where the government or private sector will listen to you and be like, okay, what's this person saying that they can use technology to stop, you know, for example, malaria? Those still are jobs of the future. So it's a very wide dynamic. But all I'm trying to say is a lot of these things center around technology, and a lot of these things center around the human capacity to support. One of my bosses, as I conclude, once said to me that away from technology, jobs of the future are going to be things that still need a human touch. So if you're not a tech person, you're not a numbers person, a human touch means things like what? Baking, cooking, chefs. It's still going to take a while for us to get robots to be able to bake a cake. But you still have an opportunity in a job of the future to bake a cake with your hands. But where does technology come in? It's going to sell it for you, because you're going to use the internet to sell it. There's still things around, you know, I like flowers, gardens, florists. You still need a human being to put together a bouquet of flowers. But guess what? Technology is going to help you sell that thing across the globe. So in a nutshell, I've thrown a few jobs at you. I hope you've picked out one or two.
I have picked one or two, but I also relate with what one of your bosses said, which is true. I heard this on a podcast, and there was like, there's going to be a shift. The same way there was a shift in the information age where certain jobs came out, were no longer prestigious. There's another shift where we're going back to those jobs where you're like, you still need plumbers, you still need cooks, you still need bakers, you still need a florist. Like those other jobs that we shifted from, I think a century ago or something. But yeah, so it's not a century ago, 2-3 decades back.
Yeah,
makes a lot of sense. What advice would you give a young person now?
In general or like in career? Yeah.
Career.
Okay. So if I was, I think in general, I'll pick on something my sister says to me all the time, which is find yourself. And if you can find yourself early on as a young person, you'd have done yourself a lot of justice, because you save yourself from a lot of failure and a lot of confusion when you find yourself very early on. You see the young people who have developed games, who have developed apps, who started podcasts 5 years ago, and look at where they are now. It's because they found themselves early on. So instead of riding the wave, riding with the flow, if you can find yourself very early on, please do. And do not conform to the standards of the world. The world can adjust. That's what I would say generally to a young person. And when you find yourself, find people who buy into your dream, surround yourself with people who will not kill the dream for you, so that you'll be able to propel and reach for the stars and just do it. You know, out of the 10 people, the 100 people who say no, there's going to be that one person who will say yes. That's the person you need to cling to and hold on to. And you just don't know where life is going to take you. But in a career, interesting. I still say that I'm also still a mentee. I run that joke that, you know, and as much as I mentor, I'm still a mentee. So I also go to my mentors and ask for advice. But in a career setting, which also spills to life again, is when you find yourself a board of directors for your life. I have specific people I speak to who give me counsel, who give me direction and guidance, because I know they come from a good place. I know they've seen life more than I have, and they will give me counsel from a genuinely good heart and a good position. So find those people for yourself. A board of directors, the same way a board works. Somebody who you talk to about personal things, somebody you talk to about career, somebody you talk to about life. Most times you find that they intertwine in terms of responsibilities, but do that for yourself. It gives you perspective. It gives you a lens to life that you cannot just see. For you, you're just seeing it as it has to be A. But you speak to somebody else and they'll tell you, but so there's X, Y, and Z. And that gives you perspective into, you know, different avenues and direction and counsel that life can give you. So that's a bit of advice that I can give. And lastly, maybe I'll say, regardless of what life throws at you, please stay true to yourself. Don't lose your authenticity. There can only be one Akka in this world. So stay true to whoever that Akka is. The world needs that particular Akka in all her glory and existence, just as you are. So stay true to that authentic self of yours and carry that person in the different doors or even in the different hats that you wear. It will serve a purpose. It will serve a purpose at some point. The dots of life only connect backwards. So I think that's that.
I lost you on the part where you said the dots of life only connect backwards.
And that's about it. That's where I paused. I said the dots of life.
Okay, then I didn't lose you. Thank you so much. This has been an insightful conversation again. Left me with so many questions. And also, just a side note, a few life decisions happened this week. And from our last conversation, I was like, okay, maybe I'll ask her about it privately anyway. But it made a lot of sense. And again, you are really sparking something in me and making me look at life very differently. And I'm very grateful for that, for this opportunity for us to have these conversations and also just share them with everybody else. I want to give you this opportunity to ask me a question again.
Okay. I need to think now. Because I forgot that I have to ask you a question. Okay, when 2025, Akka in 2030, what does she look like?
Akka in 2030 would have a tech company and it would be stable. I will stop referring to it as a startup. So I really do picture her like that. And she'll be traveling more. Hopefully she would decide to get her master's in or out. Really big question mark on that. But yeah, and I think, or probably she'd still be very enthusiastic about her life and still be a little sunshine that she is. So yeah, I think Akka in 2030 would also have like a big age. So like you, I love kids. So still be thriving in that dimension. So mostly it's going to be focused on business, family, and travel. Yeah. That's what I see 2030 look like. And also, honestly, even the next 5 years look like that. Big on business, travel, and family. Like, I think those are like my most important elements of my life. And yeah, I enjoy that part of me a lot.
I love that. And the reason I asked is so that 5 years from now, you can have a reference point when you listen to this conversation, and it will tell you how far away you've strayed or how far close you've gotten to something that you wished you wanted when you were younger. And it's not to say that it's cast in stone. Every different phase of your life, especially as females, will be different. What you want at 21 versus 25 versus 30, 35, 40, 45 changes drastically, especially as a female, because you go through different phases and lenses. Sometimes you'd have thought, oh, I wish I married at 21. And then you're 35 and you're like, oh my gosh, if I married at 21, that wouldn't, you know, have worked out well. Or guess what? I married at 21 and it worked out really well, right? But the reason I ask those questions is sometimes it's just beautiful to see what we wanted when we were younger. And you look back at it when you're older and you're like, huh, I loved how I thought at that point. Or I love the perspective I had then. And now this is the perspective I have. And you somewhat soldier on with life using that lens. So that's about it.
Thank you so much. I loved having you here again. And I think, again, today's conversation had like a different turn to it, which I totally enjoyed. And hopefully the listeners did as well. And again, thank you so much for saying yes and just gracing us with your knowledge and your time. And yeah, I really hope you loved this and enjoyed this.
Thank you so much for having me. I don't take it lightly. I really don't. This is, I think, the first podcast I'm doing. So this is absolutely brilliant, right? Yeah. This is the first podcast I'm doing, obviously futuristically, with many more to come. But this is a landmark one for me because it's the first one and it's a young girl, a young female. I don't take it lightly. You can have anybody you want on this podcast, and to have one of the names or guests be me, for me, is a true honor. And I'm humbled and I'm thankful. And I wish you all the best as you navigate this journey. And I hope that it becomes bigger and better as the days go by.
Thank you. And for everybody listening, I hope you enjoyed this episode and share it with a friend. With that being said, bye for now.